Our next guest is someone I've gotten to know over the last few years, and I will precursor with the introduction I received. I was from a person that I was referred to, Alyssa Maruzzo, who said, "I've got to put you in touch with Carlene Lewell. She is by far the most passionate fire plug for physical literacy that I ever know." And when the first time I had the conversation with her, I was absolutely blown away with all the wisdom and all the different amazing things that she has done over the years. So I'll give you a brief introduction. Carlene Lewell is the co-founder of Delta Gymnastics, which grew to over 4,000 participants pre-COVID. During her 10 years, she also helped fundraising for the amazing facility that's right near to our Delta Civic Hall. She's also one of the founders of Delta Sports Council and was with Delta Gymnastics for 38 years till she retired in 2017. But now also wears many other hats. She's the chair for Kids Sport Delta, Operation Red Nose, Ladner Business Association, Tourism Delta. Shared with me recently, we connected when she was gracious to donate some sports equipment for a camp that we are going to be hosting at the end of the month, that she's busier now than she's ever been. She has a degree in education and major in physical education, a substitute teacher in Delta for many years, and is by far one of the most passionate people and knowledgeable in terms of what happens in sport. And we'll talk a lot about return to play, but most importantly, our biggest passion point, physical literacy. So looking forward to the chat. Thanks for joining us, Carlene.
Thanks for having me, Glenn. It's a pleasure to be here and happy to share what I know with others and my opinions.
I know you're never going to hold back on those, and that's why I love having conversations with you. So before we get into the reason why you're so passionate, maybe give us a little bit about your story in terms of where you grew up, what you played, why you became so passionate for physical literacy.
Well, I was thinking about this morning, you know, it's interesting because you being a hockey buff and your background being in hockey, mine being in gymnastics, which is what I coached and administrated for 38 years, and actually more than that because I was only 38 with Delta Gymnastics. Before that, I was doing other stuff, but always with gymnastics. But my background actually, as I grew up, was always in team sports. And basically, basketball was the sport that I played in school and in community. And then when I went through university and I had to take one of our mandatory courses was taking gymnastics. And I'm going, this is what I really wanted to do. And now I'm too old. So it just sort of became something that I loved when I took it. And I actually went back and audited that course about two other times, just because I felt that the coach or the teacher at the time was so good on fundamentals that if you have good fundamentals, you could actually teach a lot of different sports, because you've got, and especially in gymnastics, what are these fundamentals that I need so I can, maybe in my lifetime, I can do something with this. And actually, it came to be when I was a teacher that the kids came up to me. It was a high school in Stevenson High, and it was grade 11 and 12 at the time. And they said, can we join, have a gymnastics club? And I'm going, this is fate, you know, that this is happening. And so it sort of all started from there. And then I went on to the junior high, to Hugh Boyd at the time, and I did all the phys ed there, thanks to the teacher that had the gymnastics program. And so then after I left teaching and started having a family, I started coaching and was in Winnipeg, and then started the competitive club at St. Albert in St. Albert, Alberta, and then moved to Delta.
And been a builder all through the process, starting them up. I remember the amazing story you told me about all the work that you did behind the scenes to raise the money, the fundraising for the amazing facility that Delta does now.
That's a whole different story that you can talk about, is how to raise money for sport when sport, you know, it's sort of been a pet peeve of mine that sport cannot get a charitable number because our parent organizations have it. And you look at so many organizations like the dance studios, they can all get their own charitable numbers. And trying to raise money and not being able to get a tax receipt unless you go through National Sport Trust Fund, which has now changed its name and I don't remember what it is, or your parent organization. You know, I mean, trying to tell that to somebody that wants to give you a substantial amount of money, was really difficult. And I remember on our last campaign, we raised $3.2 million. And I had a great campaign leader who was an ex-mayor of Delta, Doug Husband, and have great respect for him. And he kept on asking me, now, how again do I tell people they get a tax receipt? Could you go through this again? And I'm going, you know, because he had raised money politically for so long. And, you know, he was really great to do this, but trying to explain it, it just, I don't know. Whenever I have the chance, I always push that, you know, that sport isn't, it isn't easy. And they make it very difficult for us to raise money. So then we end up with the bottle drives and the car washes and then selling the chocolate bars and doing that because getting donations is hard.
Yeah, and there's so many people in the space that are competing basically for that almighty charitable dollar, right? And yeah. Now with COVID, it's really, really tough because there's a lot of people that have been cash strapped and have.
So I'm, you know, that's another thing that I'm quite happy to talk about sometime is how to raise money and how to do a campaign in sport. I've done it twice. Raised 900,000. Well, no, actually, we only raised 300,000. Because we only needed to have a third, but raised the $3 million the second time. So
there you go. That's one of the big kudos that Carlene was involved with way back when. And it was kind of eye-dropping when she said millions of dollars. I was like, whoa, it's staggering. And the interesting thing about sports in Canada, like we're our Fur Love of the Game is a not-for-profit organization, but in the U.S., they're all by default become charitable as a not-for-profit. So I guess it is easier for them to issue charity receipts, but Canada is a completely different kind of worms. So
totally.
So then obviously the passion for physical activity through gymnastics became a real big advocate for physical literacy way before it became kind of a mainstream term. Maybe give us a little bit of insight into how that developed.
That's a good lead in too with the raising the money because it.
Oh. Looks like we lost her. Stand by, she'll jump back on. Looks like we're back live, and sorry for that hiccup. Carlene had a challenge where the Wi-Fi just disconnected, and had some challenges with the audio, but I think we're back on track, Carlene. Thanks for rejoining us, and let's continue the conversation. So we touched on the history, the background, what made you so passionate about physical literacy, but maybe we can now jump into what exactly is physical literacy for those people that have not really come up to speed with it? I know when we originally connected, it was still kind of a buzzword that was being thrown around, and you know, Dean Krilliers and some of the other leaders in the space that have developed it. But that was what, 4 years ago, where we're starting to ramp up. Now, I believe even in the U.S., a lot of people are familiar with the term. But the irony is, when I ask the question in clinics, workshops, where I've been across Canada, and I ask people. Yeah, anybody familiar with the term fundamental movement skills, physical literacy, LTAD, PD, whatever? It's amazing how few hands go up. So maybe I'm not wanting to have to go down this path, but what is it and why is it important?
Well, that's really true. And I was about to say that, you know, it was trying to raise all this money that I realized that, you know, I had to go at it at a different angle. And it really introduced me to the term physical literacy and child, you know, the physical development of children. And so that's why the building that we are in is called the Sport Development Center, because it's really about building physical literacy and sport fundamentals that builds the base for children so that they can not only do gymnastics, which we're teaching, but gymnastics really is a very foundational sport. Because then they can go off. It's a jumping place for it to go off and do other sports. So what is physical literacy? Well, in Vancouver, and I don't remember the year, I'm thinking 2017, the physical literacy, International Physical Literacy Summit conference was held in Vancouver. And it was at that conference that they defined the term physical literacy. What are we going to tell the world it is? And it's having the confidence and the competency to move your body in space or in both in land, in water, in air. And so what that means is that, and I really see it now that I have grandchildren that are, you know, the oldest are 11, how they've grown in this. And having physical literacy, having the competency and the confidence to do something is going to allow them to participate. And if a child is doesn't have the confidence in themselves to participate with their friends because they don't feel that they can kick that soccer ball as well as their friends are. So I don't want to be bullied. I don't want to be told that I'm a dummy. I don't want to be told that, oh, I can't keep up. So they don't join. And so by not joining, then we're also, we're not helping that child build their confidence in themselves as a person. So this all leads by people not having the physical literacy to participate in activities. We don't even have to call it sport. It's just things that are happening on the playground. Maybe it's being able to, cross the bars, the monkey bars. when maybe they're playing tag or they're playing follow the leader and I can't do that part of it. You know, we want kids to have those all those skills so that they can stay with their children, so they're with their peers. So they're not going to be bullied. They're not going to lose self-confidence in themselves, all which leads to social, mental, and development, and depression in children. And that has become so prevalent in children these days, is not feeling good about themselves, and it leads to depression. We've had child suicides. You know, is physical literacy the answer? Well, no, it's not going to be 100% the answer, but it's something that we really do need to identify with. And the schools, unfortunately, I don't think are not doing a very good job with it. And I don't think as a community, we're not doing a good job with it. My son lives in Courtney Comox, and I go over there and I see the difference between what happens in our community with children and their activities versus what's happening in Comox, because Comox is really, they're really embracing this. And, and it's a huge difference how they encourage their kids to walk, run, scooter, whatever, to school. And parents cannot even drive their kids within four blocks of the school. So if you don't live in the catchment area, well, you can drive to the catchment area and drop off your kids.
So at least they're getting their four blocks. They're not getting their 2,000 steps, but they're getting at least some of it. And I remember all too well when I can't remember where we were at when we had the conversation. You planted the seed with me, free-range kids. You said, did you hear the story about the people in Manitoba and the people in Washington and Lenore Scanese's amazing work where she's, the advocate for, bringing that back. We've got to give kids an opportunity to have unsupervised free play. And since that point, I've talked to her. I've talked to Peter Gray. Had a great chat with Mariana Bersani about risky play. So I know that that's kind of a world that you're really embracing and really want to encourage. So why is it so important that kids have that?
Well, I think it's really important during this pandemic too, as to what has happened. It's such a big topic. If we don't allow kids to take risks, then the little risks that they may take, and actually I won't go there. I will. I was at my doctor's office.
You know it's coming, so you might as well just let it go.
It's just a small example. I was at my doctor's office, and she had had a child recently, and the child was about 7 months old. And I said, oh, she must be, crawling and going something about, going, oh, yeah, she's starting to go up the stairs. And I said, oh, that's great. And she says, oh, no, it's not. And I'm going, this is my doctor telling me that it's not good for her kid to crawl up the stairs. I said, well, why aren't you letting them crawl up the stairs? Well, they might get hurt. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, this is my doctor. I can't do this. I said, we need to have a conversation about this, because I really believe that children will only go as far as they feel comfortable going. And in a toddler or a baby crawling the stairs is only going to go as high as they can come back down. And maybe you need to help them, teach them how to come back down rather than putting a gate up. Because you're not allowing that kid, right from that beginning, leads to adulthood when we want to take risks. So we're planting a seed very young in a kid. Oh, can't do that. Instead of try it and see what you can do. And, not letting kids climb trees, not letting kids, the restrictions that parents are putting on them. My daughter, we were at a, well, this was, we, she has this big playground near her place when she lived in Newmarket. And she would take the kids there. Well, she had a third one at the time, and it was a real baby, and not even crawling. And so the other two were out doing the playground, and she had the baby. And a parent came to her and said, "Aren't you worried about your kids? They're on the other side of the playground." She said, "No, I think I can see them. I'm quite fine. I can see them over there." And, you know, instead of standing under the kid and saying, oh, are you sure that's okay? But encouraging them, can you go one step higher? You know, I think another thing with actually teaching the kids how to take risk. I mean, when you've not allowed them to take risk and now you want them to take risk, you've got to roll back. And how do we do that? And so when kids, so you've got to sort of, you know, deprogram them. And, you know, I was with a child and she was trying to do the monkey bars. You know, just going hand over hand across the rail. And she says, "Oh, I can't do this." And I said, "Can you try?" She said, "But I might fall." I said, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to circle my arms around your legs. I'm not going to touch you. But if you fall, I'm going to catch you." And, you know, she made it three rails. And then she fell and I caught her and she was fine. So she was now willing to try it again and maybe she'll do four. You know, so how can we teach these kids that I can do it instead of, oh, I'm not allowed to do it, I better not try it?
Okay, let me ask you a question. When you were growing up, same with me, we go to the playgrounds. The two of my favorites, and the one that frustrates me the most, is they got rid of the carousel.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Because it was too dangerous, because kids were getting, you know, they're falling off, a bunch of bruises. I probably fell off that thing, I don't know, 100 times over the course of, you know, my elementary school. I loved it. Like, I even though I got bumps and bruises, and we all had bumps and bruises growing up, but we became resilient. We learned how to overcome adversity. Like, two of the most important life lessons are, one, they're intertwined. Kids now, they because there's not enough free play, and when we're coming out of COVID, the one thing that really I enjoyed the most is as we are slowly starting to ease back to, you know, opening up the playgrounds and the campground, all that stuff. Kids were outside playing. You know, initially they were in their backyard or the front yard or on a deck, and then they started going to the parks. And when I saw, you know, 16 kids running around our park near our house, I was ecstatic. It's starting to happen again. So how do we make sure that momentum keeps going? Because that kind of forced the issue of free play. The 2.5 months these kids were cooped up at home.
I totally agree. And I think they were coming out of this different. I've been really encouraged to see the number of kids that are riding their bikes around the community, around our neighborhood, that are younger than would have been doing it before. Prior to COVID, I think we were only seeing teenagers. Now I see the 7-year-old, the 8-year-old, and they're coming by my house and I've never seen them before. And I think that's a really good thing. And I think parents are beginning to think, I need to let this kid get out of the house and I can't be with them. And so they're giving them more risk. But one thing that, you know, when I've been around talking on physical literacy at different, to different parents, I go to PAC groups, et cetera. Although I don't mention it, the questions that come up at the end is, but I can't do that. I'm scared. I say, I'm scared. The parent's scared. I'm going, what are you scared of? Are you scared that your child's going to get hurt? No, she said, I'm scared that I will be reported as a bad parent. And I had that at every time I spoke, and I never talked about it. And I'm going, what do you mean by being a bad parent? She says, well, because others feel, just like the example of my daughter at the playground, others feel that I should be with them. And I know that my kids are street smart, that they can do it, that they can go out and they can look after themselves. And I said, so really what we need to do is that has to be the new norm. We need a paradigm shift where that is acceptable. That is what a good parent is, that they're letting these kids take these risks. You and I, Glenn, we would go out and our parents would say, come home when the lights went on.
Yeah.
You know,
if they even said that.
And we didn't have cell phones to phone them and tell them, you know, when do you, you know, oh, this is where I am. I remember people on our block having different types of bells, and they would ring their bells when it was dinner time so that we didn't know. I mean, you know, somehow we could hear this. And I mean, I was always way up the other end of the block, and my parents couldn't see where I was. But I mean, we grew up to have, you know, the kids that are don't have that, we don't know what they're going to be like as adults, because they haven't got there. Even our kids had more freedom than the kids today. I mean, my kids walk to school. I mean, I, you know, they have great stories on how I made them do stuff like that, you know. Well, I mean, it's all good, but they joke about it.
Yeah, both my son and daughter were in French immersion right from K all the way through grade 12. And of course, all the schools were not necessarily really close to us. So early on, yes, we drove them to school, or the daycare would drive them to school. But by the time 10, 11 years old, I said, now it's time for you to start walking. And they kind of looked at me and said, what are you talking about? I said, I walked to school when I grew up. You're going to walk to school now. And even if it's like when they went to their, well, they both ended up going to an 8 to 12. So it was not a middle school and then a senior high school like it was for me. Right. And that was a 45-minute walk. And they just said, okay. And they either walked or they rode their bike. Off they went. You know, and that was 13 years old. As far as I was concerned, you know, that was a necessary evil. That's your 2,000 steps. You need that every day.
Yeah.
And they were better for it. They said, yeah, okay. You know, where I did kind of cave is my son was in a hockey academy for 1 year. Hauling that bag 45 minutes is a little bit of a challenge. So I would drop them off. They'd store it, whatever the case may be. But other than that, they walked and rode to school. And, you know, were the better for it as far as I was concerned.
And it's not just walking to school. I mean, that's part of it. It's all the interactions that happen walking to school. And, you know, I remember my granddaughter telling me that, you know, she was feeling that she was bullied by, and I can't remember how she said that. And I said, you know, I remember walking to school and we didn't have cell phones, excuse me, but we would write chalk notes on the sidewalk. I hate so-and-so. It's the same type of bullying, you know, it's just that we didn't have cell phones or we did it in a different way. And I said, you know, that type of bullying, Rowan, is the same. Like, it hasn't changed since when I was a kid. We just have to be strong enough as individuals to be able to fight back with that. And again, that comes back to how can physical literacy help that? How are we giving our kids, are they taking risks? Are they be able to be resilient to things like this? And it's, you know, it calls, all these little things all add up. I wanted to say, though, about talking about when I was saying parents were complaining that they were bad parents. They were also saying, I'm nervous that I will get reported to social services and, you know, my kids would then be taken away or the police will interrupt. And that is a real case. And we've seen that case. And you mentioned it earlier with the family in Montreal. We saw it recently. I just read an article or it was on the news. That the fellow that had the five kids that was sending the oldest kids to school on a bus and got reported and was told he couldn't do that. And there was a court case on that.
Where was that? Is that the Washington one for the original free range one? That
I can't remember. I had it in my notes and then I, sure. Anyway. But that has just come that he was okay. He hasn't been charged. But the whole process, that what is it telling those children? It's not about the parents and the, it's about what is it telling those children that my parent isn't right? My parent isn't doing it right. You know, even the question when, I think it was the Winnipeg one where they came to the door and it was like, mommy, what's wrong? What did we do wrong? And you didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong either. But why would they even have to justify that? So in doing this,
I just add on to that Winnipeg one in case people don't know the story, because I think that was one of the conversations we had. That was the one where the woman in Manitoba was inside of her house, I think, with the youngest. Or no, she was actually making lunch or whatever the case may be. And all three of her kids, I think there was one was a 1 year's or a 2 years old and five and seven. They're all pretty young. But they had a fenced backyard. So it was, and she could see them from the kitchen. And the neighbor reported her for what claimed was unsafe. And she was then out there directly supervising them. And then the rigmarole that she had to go through from social services and the police went on for hours. Same with the kids in Washington when that was reported that they were walking to school on their own, and they were found by the police. But what got me, it wasn't the fact that they were just, accusing the parents for not safe behavior or, abusive behavior. They put those kids into a locked room, no food or water for almost 3 hours. You're telling me that's not abusive? Like, that was what got me. I'm like, there's something wrong with this process. And we really need to revisit and find a happy medium, because you're right. You've had a lot of dialogue with concerned parents. I don't blame them, but the other side of the coin is we need to ease up on that challenge to make it easier for them.
Well, certainly. And this is the message they're getting that's coming on the media. It's making headline news. And so they're going, oh, I better be careful. I better not do that. So in a group that I volunteer with, it's called the CYC, which is the Child Youth Committee, which I think most cities have. Anyway, there's a breakout group of that, and we're really trying to address that issue. And we're talking to social services, and hopefully we're going to talk to the police and say, what do you know about this? Like, how do you feel about this? And so that we can reaffirm with parents that this isn't the case, that especially now after COVID, or not after, during this pandemic, where parents are letting their kids out, they need to know that this is good. This is part of our new norm, that your kids, and even if that's how they look at it, even though we know, you and I know, that this is the way it should have been all the way along. But if they think that now it's okay, I don't care how they get to that opinion. I just want to know that those kids can go out to play. And wouldn't it be great if they could even go to the playground and not have the parents at the playground? Because during all of this COVID, I have felt really concerned about those parents who are working still or working at home and have children but are living in condos or apartments whose playgrounds, if they could go to them, are also closed.
Yeah.
And where are those kids supposed to do? Well, we better pick up my electronics and maybe play house party with a friend or Fortnite or something. And, that's all they can do.
I think the biggest celebration for me, while I'm just touching on that subject, is when I drove past our little playground park, which is right beside a baseball field, the sign was removed that it was no longer closed. That to me was traumatic when they closed that park for, it was about almost 2 months. But when they took that sign off, and then the days that followed and all the kids were going there, they were walking to it or running across the street, because we're all a block away from it, right? My kids spent years, and now they're young adults, but they still go there. They still go to that playground. They still go to that ball field. So that was exciting for me. And I really, really hope that that'll continue.
Yeah, I know. I was encouraged just driving down our fifth main street in Tawasin, and the big park by Windscale had some bunch of kids playing baseball. I'm going, I don't know whether you're a team or whether you just picked this up, but I'm so excited that I'm seeing you playing baseball. And then there was a whole nother group that looked like maybe they were cheerleaders that, couldn't do it inside. And they had set this all up, and all these kids were all well distanced, and there was somebody running through some stuff with them. And I'm going, good on you guys. I mean, pick it up, do something. I just think we've got to be creative in our thinking. We've got to think differently. And I think coming back from this, talking about organized sport, that maybe there won't be as many kids doing organized sport because we have more kids doing unstructured play. And, they don't have, I think we have all felt the weight taken off of us of not having to be someplace somewhere at some time, and the busyness of our life. And we've come back to, we're busy. And I have certainly seen it get busier as we reach our new norm, and we're used to being busy. But we still have had a time where we've appreciated not being as busy. And did we like that? Maybe some of us didn't. But we also accepted that. And if that becomes better for our health, it's a good thing. That, we're maybe going for more walks, or we're going for a bike ride, or we're taking our family and we're going for a picnic, or we're doing that and we hadn't done that before.
Yeah, and the thing that I shared this yesterday, I was talking with Steve Boyle, and he actually kept track of the days. He said, I think he said 114 consecutive days he was with his kids. They were empty nesters. Now they've come back for various reasons. So they're adults. And I'm in the same boat. Both my kids are still living at home because they're both going to school. But just two nights ago, I had them remind me last day. So what we were laughing so hard about, because I literally, they were telling stories about when they were in daycare and their daycare were driving them to school because they were like really young at that point. And they said, she used to bring her home phone. Remember the old cordless phones that had the antenna that you pulled up?
I'm getting really
so she had one of these home phones. Instead of the cell phone era, maybe the cell phone was too big, whatever. But in lieu of taking a cell phone with her, she would take the home phone. And sometimes even when they went to mission or Wheeler, and then she'd have to go make a phone call, and then she could go pick up the phone. I don't understand why it's not working. And like my wife and I were, like, you never told us this story. She goes, yeah, Elizabeth used to do that all the time. She'd like blah, blah, blah. And we started laughing. And I think I laughed. And that's the biggest cure for when you're going through a big challenge like we've gone through the pandemic. We have laughed so much over the last 2.5 months about all these different stories that they never shared with us because we never really had the time. I remember hauling them all to all these different events when they were in all this stuff. And this quality time, I think, was really good for us. And that's the silver lining. Hopefully that will continue. That's the big challenge.
Yes. How to balance it all. Can we come to a better balance?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
Instead of having your kids, I mean, sport is important. I think that sport, organized sport, is really important for kids. I mean, we know that it's not about the skills that they're learning in sports. It's about the sportsmanship. It's about time management skills that they've had. You know, and we find that kids that are in sports do better in school. You know, and is it just... why? And better self-esteem. So much. There's so many benefits of participation. And then the memories. The memories that you have. And I don't know about you, but the memories that come back are not about, oh, I learned something, how, you know, and how I, maybe in hockey, it's how that I went to and I did so many goals in a game and that was a highlight. But usually it's the trips that we went on and how what we did with our team and the fun that we had outside of the hockey. Outside of the arena, you know, that's the trips that, you know, you remember.
No, I agree with you. Probably one of the most vivid memories I have on my provincial championship football team was the team dinners. Like, and remembering, like, and that was back in the day where, you know, the parents drank even more alcohol than they do now. The coaches did the same. There was no restrictions and what have you. And the laughter that we'd have of those team dinners. We had big teams, you know, so we'd literally fill up a whole restaurant with 35 players and, you know, 5 or 6 coaches and all the parents and the conversations we'd have. That to me was the most vivid. The pool parties and the friendships that developed and all that stuff. Yeah, it was memorable winning those championships. Yes, it was memorable. And a bunch of different sports I was involved with because you started off the conversation before I'm not just the hockey guy because I was hockey, rugby, football, baseball, volleyball, you name it, I played it. But those are the memories. And those are the things that are being deprived on the organized. But also the vivid memories I have as a kid in the free play. Like one of my favorite places, and we live right near the gully in Delta, was going down to the gully in the riverbed and chasing garter snakes and all that kind of stuff. And my mother was not with me. It was me and my buddies. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of kids from school. We'd just go, let's go to the gully. That doesn't happen anymore.
No. Trying to find wooded spaces now too is difficult. I mean, you're lucky that you still have that in North Delta, but not that many kids can access it, you know, because they're just too far away. You know, I mean, I had the same thing when I was growing up. There was a real wooded area and we went down there and I mean, it was a good 40-minute walk to get there, you know, and we were building forts and it was a great time, you know, and that's what kids are not doing. And I know that they're trying in the, you know, the city of Delta has these, I can't remember what it's called in the summer. They did the playground, not the playgrounds. It was, I can't remember what they called them, but there was one in North Delta, but there was one in South Delta at the rec center where the adventure playgrounds, I think they're called, where you could go and they had all sorts of material and you could hammer and build. And I mean, if that's what we have to do, that's what we have to do. But what was really wrong with that, to me, is that the only way you could go there is if your parent sat outside the gate and because you had to have a parent around. Well, you know, sure, the parent could sit on a lawn chair and read a book. But who had the time to do that? You know, why can't we just let the kids go? I mean, they did have somebody there. It wasn't like there wasn't a supervisor. But, you know, why do we have to have the parents outside?
It's kind of almost like
you need everybody come in and give you your phone number. Everybody has a phone number. Most of these kids have cell phones. Even if there's, you know, they have to have something. You get a hold of the parents. The supervisor has the phone number. You know, that to me really was not like what more kids would have gone there if they could have got there themselves or dropped off even.
Yeah, and that whole element with they could – there was I shared this out a couple of years ago. I still think I have a video in one of my presentations where the Sandlot unsupervised baseball. I think it was a broadcast on NBC about a year and a half ago. Callan was running a baseball team. He was getting frustrated. The kids were found it too structured, the pressure and stuff like that. So, you know what? We're just going to have unsupervised baseball one day a week. And it was 9-year-old age group. And when he was being interviewed by the journalist, he says, "So did you have any idea what you're doing?" He goes, "I had no idea." And I'm shaking my head and said, "What do you mean? You had no idea? Didn't you grow up in the era that I did where it was just show up at the ballpark and everybody throw their gloves in and then you just form your teams and you have one bat and a ball?" But the kids that were interviewed, they said, "So what do you enjoy more? Do you enjoy the organized baseball or do you enjoy this?" And every single kid was saying, "Oh, I love this more." Right. And Steve Boyle shared with me yesterday one of the top sports, I guess for lack of a better word, that they're doing in the Connecticut camp that he just ran this week, was they grabbed a tennis racket and a wiffle ball and they played baseball. And every single kid was like, "That's my favorite." And he goes, "I bet you if we did that all week, that would have been it." Because every kid could hit the ball. They could all catch the ball. They all figured out the rules. They had a blast, big smiles on their faces. So, you know, these are the things that a lot of youth sports organizations don't clue into is all you have to do is make it fun. And you know, like we had all these issues with declining registrations, attrition, the parental behavior, the coaches screaming at kids. Kids just want to play. They just want to be kids.
And I think there is a place for everything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, gymnastics always gets criticized because we certainly are an early developing sport. And, you know, but our kids, if they retire from gymnastics at 15, they go and pick up something else and they can pick it up really well because they've got the ability, they've had the body conditioning to do that. You know, we get criticized for the length of time some of those kids are in the gym, but those kids love it. And to them, that's fun. But it's not for everybody. And those are the exceptions. But the other part of it is fun. You know, like it's more unsupervised. It's more unscheduled. And that's like sport should be. Sport has to be fun. And it has to – fun can be because it's just so much fun to play it. And it's also fun to learn.
Yeah, and that's one of the big missing components is the too much structure is not allowing for that creativity to flourish, hence the free play model, unstructured, that's where creativity comes from because you're not having someone tell you how to do it, why to do it, you just do it just for the sake of doing it. And we don't have enough of that, and that's what I encourage a lot of coaches, make sure you have, you know, like 20-30% of your practices, you allow for that free unstructured play, because that's where you can see the creativity. And in the hockey space that I coached for a number of years, that's where I saw my lines when I just did stick and puck at the beginning of the practice. Those three kids gelled together. Those, you know, it made it real easy. But a lot of coaches struggle with that, which is kind of unfortunate because they just got, we only have 60 minutes. And we have to make sure it's boom, 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 drill after drill after drill. No, they give them a little opportunity to have that unstructured free play. So
I think a big takeaway from the conversation is let your kids go outside and play.
Yeah. Yeah. And absolutely. But I guess if there's anything on the boomerang effect on the back end, now we're coming out of COVID. So it's understandable the parents are going to be leery, maybe even more leery now, having their kids outside and coming out of their bubbles or their cohort groups before we really get to that the new normal, whatever we're going to call it, or the phase four when we've got the vaccine or we have the treatment. Do you think that we've started to see some sports have been able to return back? You said you shared when I was chatting with Dave Newsom, you jumped on and gymnastics started up in June. What were some of the things that they have to do that are maybe are different, or what they've set the bar? Because we had this on the pre-call, like Delta Gymnastics, what have they done?
You know, I can only relate to Delta Gymnastics because they're, you know, we have a large enough facility too that, you know, they can't, they have six to a group. The coaches can't touch them. So there's no spotting, which I have never been. I always think that the kids need to learn it. As a female coach, we had to let kids learn it through drills more than just throw them into a skill. Where a male coach that maybe it was stronger and could catch them, you know, didn't do all the drills that a female coach would do. So now you're back to the drills, which is great way of learning. But they've got, you know, with six kids to a group, they can space them. So, you know, they can do that. I drove by the gym the other day, or maybe I saw it on Instagram, and they were training outside. They had their mats outside, you know, and so that, and they've got day camps going all summer. And they've got lots of day camps going, and there's, I don't know what the registration is, but they've really figured it out really well. And they're, but I think talking about getting the kids outside, we just like you've got to teach them. And I think all the kids have learned through this that they've got to keep a, you know, you learn by example. If the parents are doing it when they're out, then they're going to do it too. And they have to learn why. And they've learned that. I think kids have learned that. So if they haven't, then yeah, that's a problem. But we would hope that the kids have learned that this is what COVID is. This is the dangers of it. And this is all about taking risk. You know, we go out to the grocery store, we're taking a risk. We have to teach them that they can go and play, but they're taking a risk. But let's minimize the risk by not getting buddy-buddy with your friends.
Yeah, and then the social distancing component has been a challenge for many sports. And I know a couple that I played, I'm still trying to figure out how they can return, football being one. I mean, the huddle is going to be eliminated, right? I mean, how are you going to do that? Rugby, the scrum, like how are we going to have scrums? Like you're in tight with like eight players, and unless you've been part of that bubble and the quarantine period or whatever the case may be, that's going to take a while. But one of the biggest hits that I saw is Ken West cancel all fall sports at the university level. So yeah, there isn't going to be any field lacrosse, field hockey, volleyball. I think volleyball was one of them, but volleyball was indoor, and the three or four others. That's that. And then in the U.S., it's really becoming a challenge for the football, because football in almost every school is kind of the financial catalyst for all their sports programming. Just yesterday, I saw Stanford, who had 34 varsity sports, is now, as a result of COVID and financial challenges, are going to be canceling and shutting down 11 of their varsity programs, right? Which in the trickle effect, I mean, that's a Division I school, and there's a lot of others that are kind of going down that path. We've got some challenges on that front as well.
Well, I think, you know, sport has to come back where it's going to be talking about fundamentals. You're basically teaching the skills. And, you know, I mean, hopefully that doesn't last more than 6 months, that by, you know, next spring that we're actually playing the game. But just doing the skills right now for team sports is really what it has to be. Making those skills fun, making it fun to do. You know, baseball is one that comes back that doesn't, you know, social distancing is a little bit easier. You know, they can't all probably go into whatever the bunker thing is called.
Bunker. The dugout.
There you go.
Bunker. Okay.
But yeah, you know, but before our time is up, I wanted to talk about kids sport.
I'd love for you to talk about kids sport. That was going to be my last question, because we have about 10 minutes before I have to wrap up.
Yeah. You know, what is kids sport? And if anybody watching this doesn't know, kids sport is started in British Columbia. And now is nationally across Canada, and there's nationally kids sport. But it's, we're there to help kids whose families couldn't otherwise not afford to have them into sport. And there is provincially there is one across in every province, and but most of the provinces have a regional kids sport. So you want to look up under About Us under the website, you'll see the chapters, and most of the cities have their own chapters. And if you live in that city, then you apply to that city. So I'm from Delta, and I'm the chair of Kids Sport Delta. So it's not where you're doing sport, it's where you live. If you are doing sport in Surrey, or if I'm doing sport in Vancouver, but you live in Delta, you can then apply. And each chapter will have a different amount of money that they can give out. Right now, we can give $500 per child per calendar year, which is pretty good. And there's, some sports that are over that, and we pay for registration. The money we pay goes directly to your sport organization. So you may say that, my child is doing soccer, and they're doing the soccer club is North Delta Soccer. And so I phone North Delta Soccer just to confirm that that child is registered, and just to confirm the amount that they want to pay. Because sometimes one of our, which is really great, is our sports organizations have given kids sport a discounted rate. Because if they can do that, then we can spread our money greater. And so what the parent may know as the registration amount may not be exactly the same as what that organization is giving kids sport. Like, we may get the early bird, this, rate, and this person is, not an early bird. So anyway, that's the process, and you apply online. You need to prove, with your tax assessment from the previous year that this is what you made. Now during COVID, it really is going to be messed up, because what you made last year may have no relevance of what you're making right now. And so there is an area on the online application that you can, write a couple sentences about what's happening. And, it goes on trust. And, we know that people that are in need are going to apply. And that's what we want. And we really want it spread around, because there's people who don't put their children into sport because they can't afford it. And they don't even look for subsidies. So they need to know that there is subsidies out there. We want your kids involved. It's good for them.
And which is then, like, all I worked with Kids Sport when I was in the hockey world with some of the families of the kids that I coached, and they'd approach me and say, we're in a jam, blah, blah, blah. I put them in touch with Kids Sport, and it's an amazing, amazing thing, because you help those kids keep staying in a game they loved. And there are going to be a lot of families, I think. I saw it on the news the other day, 38% of British Columbia families have had a negative impact with COVID, whether they've lost their job, been laid off, the recovery period, more going into further debt. We're all in the same boat. Like, it's been a real tough grind for everybody. What level of funding do you anticipate will be available? Because I know some of the smaller charities that do the same, they've had a tough time because they had to cancel events that were helping them do this.
We had our event canceled. We do a big, the only real big event that we do is our gala in April. And that was canceled. And we're hoping that we'll be able to do it again April 2021. We have it scheduled. But if there's anybody out there that is interested in, being on our Kids Sport volunteer team, or, if, just as we were talking about earlier, how difficult it is for sport to raise money, this is one way that we can help sport organizations, so that if we can help them, that they don't have to have the fund to help kids. Like, a lot of organizations will have a bursary fund. Well, if we can help them by them not having to do that, that's one way that we're giving to all sports. And that's what I really like, is that, we're helping all sports. It's not restricted. As long as you are part of Sport BC, that you have a provincial organization, then we're out there to help you. And that, is really great. So, and then if there's any businesses out there that, want to do a donation, anybody that wants to do a donation, get a tax receipt, Kids Sport can give you that.
And that tax receipt, that's anything over, if memory serves me right.
$20.
$20. So there you go. I mean, and it's a great cause, and it keeps kids in the game. And also, but just to clarify, Melissa, before we finish off, it is to fund the registration fees for kids in organized sports. But is it, does it applicable to anything like private camps or development camps or anything like that? It's just basically like soccer, baseball, hockey.
No, it doesn't. Long as the sport that we're giving the money to is part of Sport BC.
Gotcha.
So, you know, dance isn't included, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's also a way, you know, to help, like cheerleading wasn't really, didn't have a provincial organization, and now they've gathered themselves together and they do. So, and then you have to be a member of that.
So. Gotcha. So any sport BC recognized or sanctioned sport, they can apply for it and they can be able to receive funding of $500 per year, which is fantastic because it gives kids an opportunity. We have 1/3 before COVID, I think it's going to be higher than after COVID of kids that can't afford sports because it's just not in their economic reality for families. And with the rising cost of housing and everything else, and we do help kids be active in sport. And I can't thank you enough for doing this, Carly. And every time we chat, I have this feeling we can just keep going, you know, because the passion and the amount of commitment that you've done. And I, every time you tell me, oh yeah, I'm doing this and I'm doing this and I'm doing this and I'm doing, where do you find the time for it all? This is one last thing as before we shut this down.
Well, you know, it's just, you know, I like giving back, and yeah, you just schedule your day just like, you know, you're going to work. Both my husband and I do a lot of volunteering. And so, you know, that's what we do.
And then the thanks for all the amazing things you've done. Like, I mean, I could have listed off your whole bio and people would be like, are you finished yet? Like, all the stuff you've done has been absolutely amazing. And I can't applaud you for everything you continue to
do.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much, Carlene. It was great.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
All right. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us this week. You can find us on Facebook for Love of the Game, Twitter, TLOTG Conference, and forloveofthegame.ca. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode.